We'll call the meeting to order. First item, Representative Anselt has reviewed the minutes of the February 20th meeting and moves those. Is there any questions or comments with respect to those minutes? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those minutes are approved. We've got a little bit of change. I had promised Representative Hillstrom that we would take her bill back up first when it came back. So House File 131 is before us. In order to put it in the shape in which the author desires, I will move what would be the A070102. There is a... we had a little bit of an issue. I know that Representative Hillstrom, you have met with the stakeholders. They're all familiar with this language. I just want to make sure that we've got a good record. Apparently, the bill that went to the reviser or the information didn't quite get to the reviser, so we're just shaping it up into exactly the same format that you have visited with all of the stakeholders in yesterday's meeting. So to handle this, what I will move is that we first need to remove the AO7 0059 amendment, further we undo the oral amendment removing lines 2.12, specifically clause 7 of the first committee engrossment, in addition I would move the AO70102 amendment. Everybody on the same page, and that is the one that has in fact been shared with everybody. If there's any of the stakeholders that are not familiar with that language, the amendment is in the packets. It's also available. Is there further discussion of that to shape it up into the put it in the shape that the author desires? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, Representative Hillstrom, can you give us just kind of a brief overview of the efforts that have been made to bring us to this point? We will take very brief testimony. We heard out, I think, everybody very well the other day. But if you could kind of just walk us through where we're at now, and then we'll get your bill out here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I promised the last time I was before the committee, I have met with the stakeholders to continue to work on this language. I believe that we have taken care of a majority of the issues. We're currently talking about some ands and some ors and maybe substituting out a word or two, but for the most part, I think people are pretty comfortable with where we are. I'm hoping that you'll send us on to the next committee, and I promise to continue to work with the stakeholders as we move forward on the issue.
And with that, Representative Hillstrom, I will move your bill that it be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Public Safety and Civil Justice. With that, is there anyone that desires to testify? Mr. Neumeister.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Richard Neumeister. I'm a privacy advocate who specializes on issues of information and civil liberties. This is a consumer issue. Just as a courtesy to let you know, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am a stakeholder, just like other folks are, but I couldn't go to the meeting yesterday, and pretty much a great majority of those are business-related folks who like to keep the Social Security numbers for lots of reasons. The items I pointed out in terms of where we're legitimizing Social Security numbers without consumers really having any choice is still in the bill. Now, that is something that was proposed in a different draft, is my understanding, to take some of that stuff off, but I guess some of the other stakeholders had some heebie-jeebies about it or something. So that was still put in. So, Mr. Chairman, in summary, I still oppose the bill for consumer on consumer issues, but because of the deadlines and all that, to keep this moving. But I just wanted to get that on record. And since that time, I've done some research, and I'm just starting to talk a little bit more with Mr. Ireland. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and have a good
day. Very good, Mr. Neumeister. Duly noted, and appreciate your comments. Is there anyone else that desires to be heard? Questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. You are now off to public safety and civil justice. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next up, if I can find my agenda, is House File. Thank you. House File 189, its companion is Senate File 372, ticket scalping repeal. Do we have Representative DeLaForest and Representative Kahn with us today? Welcome to the committee. And I will move House File 189 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
Mr. Chairman, just a question regarding the procedure. I think that's right. Would we take up the Senate file and move that, or would we move the House file?
It's my understanding we are going to lay over the House file and move Senate file 372 before us and be recommended to pass be referred to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Thank you for providing a hearing. Members, Representative Kahn and I are pleased to offer Senate File 372 for your consideration today. I believe what it does is it repeals really what is an obsolete piece of legislation that is absolutely unreflective of the Internet era. If you look closely, this is a bill that was passed in 1963, and it hasn't been amended since 1975, which was Representative Kahn's eighth term. There are some reasons why this law should be repealed specifically. And first of all, what it is it's a valid contract between a willing buyer and a willing seller. There's no reason for government to get involved if two people want to get together and sell a ticket for a concert event, for example, for $5 over face value. As a matter of fact, what this should be and what it is a legitimate secondary market. For example, we don't talk about people scalping stocks or scalping real estate or scalping art or baseball cards, but just about anything else you can find in the classified ads on Sunday. Next, it is rather labor-intensive in terms of using scarce law enforcement resources. I'll leave that to Representative Kahn to address once I'm done with my remarks, Mr. Chairman. I also think this law is just unenforceable in many respects. We've moved into the Internet era. As a matter of fact, the NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, although he did not endorse this bill, was asked, isn't the NHL opposed to this? And he said, look, this is a new era. It's the Internet. It's legal in 40 other states. Also, it's unenforceable because we've got Wisconsin, our neighbors across the river. They do this legally, and they achieve all the benefits from it. I think it's also telling, and although Minneapolis is a different situation, St. Paul did not process a single case under this statute in 2006, which I think is rather telling, given that you got the XL Energy Center there. They have hundreds of events every year. I'm sure tickets get sold for above face value in front of the X, but yet the city attorney has not prosecuted a single case. I think there are also some benefits to legalization to the government. For example, right now, Ticket King across the river in Wisconsin, they're paying payroll taxes. They're paying property taxes. Their employees are over there buying lunch every day and contributing to the economy. Why don't we do that? Why don't we have these folks expanding the tax base in Minneapolis or St. Paul? As a matter of fact, the owner of Ticket King, I spoke to him, and he said, I can see the benefit to legalizing it in Minnesota. I get to ride my bike to work, although it's really bad for my business because now I'll have some good competition. I think there's also benefits to the ticket brokers themselves. You've got an incentive, if we legalize this, to incorporate, to get limited liability protection, to be able to enforce your contracts. That also benefits the consumer because now you'll have businesses operating above ground with an agent for service of process, for example, and also consumers will benefit because undoubtedly there will be more competition and more choices out there to buy these things. It's almost, in many states, members, where this is legal, you've got things out there the equivalent of Travelocity, where you can get online and look for a ticket for an event, and you can pit brokers against each other to get the best possible price at the best location for your ticket. So members, in closing, I'd just like to say, I think we ought to join the 40 other states that have legalized this. As a matter of fact, Representative Kahn and I have been a bit amazed by the support for this bill in that there's been no opposition testimony in either body, and I know a letter has been handed out, and I do acknowledge that, expressing some concerns, but no opposition testimony, and our good colleagues in the Senate saw fit to pass the bill this week 48-15. Off the Senate floor. And so, Mr. Chairman, if you would, I'd like to turn the microphone over to Representative Kahn.
Thank you, Representative Ela Forrest. Representative Kahn, welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, pleased to be here. I thought you were going to you wanted to have a camera here to take a picture of this historic combination. One of the things I would like to point out is the bipartisan nature of this bill. I carried it through all the years that the House was under Republican control, and now Representative Ela Forrest takes over when the Democrats are in control. Also, I have been working on this since 1987, and what provoked me was that in 1987, on Ford, reading the enormous 1987, for those of you who were born then, was the first time that the Twins were in the playoffs. In Minneapolis, and on the 4 days, including the playoff games, about 15 police officers made approximately 30 arrests of ticket scalpers. During that same period, officers made 183 adult arrests for other crimes, which included rape, assault, theft, and robbery. There were also 370 offenses reported. Those are minus 183 gives you the number of arrests that weren't made. And it's also interesting to note that ticket scalping crimes are only listed as an arrest because of the obvious lack of a victim to report on offenders. In the years of carrying this, and I think Chris found that this year, we found many people who call us to tell us of mistreatment at the hands of police and so forth, who talk to us on a first-name basis only and say they would be pleased to testify, except I think they'd rather testify after the law is passed than before the law is passed. The other thing is, I'll just point out, a state law against ticket scalping is essentially unwarranted government interference with the free market system of resource allocation. Scalping is a voluntary exchange that reflects the basic principles of a free market private enterprise system. Adam Smith would be proud of us if we were to repeal this today.
I just feel insulted now. I've actually read Adam Smith.
Thank you. Representative Kahn, Representative Ela Forrest, are you aware of any folks that desire to testify with regard to this bill on your behalf?
Mr. Chairman, no, not either advocating for the bill, and I have been in contact with folks, for example, the ones who sent the letter to the committee, and they are uninterested in testifying as well, to the best of my knowledge.
And Mr. Chairman, if I can add, you'll note reading the letter that the things that they suggest need to be remedied, they suggest be remedied by municipal ordinances.
That appears to be the case, Representative Kahn. Is there anyone that desires to provide testimony with regard to this bill at this time? Representative Mullery?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ela Forrest, as you know, we were going to call this back to our committee, and I said that, sent out that, could we let it go and to the members. However, I don't think anybody knew that it was going to be changed this way. I know there was concern among members on that we keep in the part that would prevent the person having the event from charging if they charge greater amount than they advertised. It would, the intent of some members of our committee at least were wanting to keep that in quite strongly, and also there was also a concern about the issue of if, let's say, the Guthrie gave tickets to high school kids to come under the condition that they would come and not sell tickets for a big profit to somebody, and that would have been still prevented in the bill that went out of our committee, and yet you're accepting the Senate language, which no longer would outlaw those two issues which were of concern to committee members in our area. And I guess I won't call it back in, but I think you should be aware that there's going to be possibly some of those people are going to be concerned that you've changed it in this way and gone along with the Senate, since that was discussed at our among our members on our committee.
Representative LaForest.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mulley, thank you for the question. Per your instructions, I did circle back around with those who expressed some concerns in the Public Safety Policy Committee, and they said that they were fine with the bill as it is before you today. For example, with one of the members, there were some questions about consumer protection, and we sat down and looked at Chapter 325F, which I think it does a far better job in protecting consumers from fraud and other activities, not just in selling tickets, but a lot of other areas. And so their concerns were satisfied. And in working with Representative Kahn, we did contact all the members of the Public Safety Committee, and all of them said that they were okay with this bill moving to the General Register in its current form. Well,
Representative Mulford.
Mr. Chairman, Representative De La Forest, I'm the chair of the committee, and I was never informed that we were going to use this, the Senate language abolishing it. I was, so.
Well, everybody was that just may be a misunderstanding.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, that may have been a misunderstanding of what a conversation was. Actually, there was kind of a mix-up in the committee report from that committee, and the committee report you should have had would have looked just like the Senate bill. But we didn't want to take the issue of going back and doing tapes and undoing minutes and all of that stuff. We decided this was a much easier way of handling it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Mullery.
I'm not going to call it back or vote any, do anything.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. Is there any other comments or questions from members of the committee? If not, and by the way, Representative De La Forest, I moved your bill, and I apologize. You are a member of the committee. I assume you probably wanted to move your own bill, but I'm just so supportive, I couldn't help myself. And,
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to have your wholehearted support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none, we will renew our motion that Senate File 372 be passed and referred to the General Register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you.
Now the tough part of today's meeting starts. Welcome, Chair Atkins, to your committee. I wonder if you would like to move your bill, sir?
Am
I doing
Mr.
this?
Mr. Chairman, what I need to do is, in order to shape the bill up, we've got an H0282A3 amendment to the H0282A2 amendment, and I apologize for that being necessary. It's only a couple of words, but rather than do it orally, I did have it drafted, and I would move that amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does everybody have a copy of the amendment, the A2 amendment? Okay. So, any questions on A2? Mr. Chairman, I understand you have an amendment to your amendment.
It's the A3 into the A2 and then the A2 to the bill, Mr. Chair. And I would move the A2 amendment to, actually I'd just incorporate that into House File 282. With that, the bill is in the shape that I wish to proceed with it. Would move the House File 282 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the General Register.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I think we have to back up and then vote on your A3 amendment to the A2.
I'd be happy to do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions in regards to that motion? All in favor? Go ahead, Representative Mahoney. Sorry, I was hoping to move along before we got to an A4 amendment.
Yeah. A3 is amended to the A2. Where does the A3 amendment go in on the A2 amendment? I'm sorry, I'm just not seeing it. Page 1, line 16.
Chair Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pender actually recommended the language in reviewing the A2. Mr. Pender, can you explain where the new words would fit into the A2 amendment? That is a good point, Representative Mahoney. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, the A3 amendment amends the A2 on line 16. Line 6 it should be. I'm sorry. That's why Representative Mahoney couldn't see it. So the A3 amendment should read on line 1.2 of the A3. It should read page 1, line 6, not line 16.
Thank you, Mr. Pender.
Okay. Any questions? Is that...
So can Mr. Pender read that to us just on following it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, so the A2 amendment then will read on line 1.6, it will read a statutory or home rule charter city that has a population, etc.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so everybody's comfortable with the amended, so we need to move the A3 to the A2 as amended orally, right? So, everybody in favor of that?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? So there we go. That's good to go. So then, to the amended A2 to our, 282. Okay. So any questions in regards to that?
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Everybody in favor of that? So you buy by saying aye, sorry. Thank you.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, so the amendment passes. Now to your amended bill, Mr. Chairman, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate it. That was the primary reason for that was that I have done the best that I can to try to work with some of the affected parties that had some concerns about how it would impact them. I'll give you a brief overview of the bill, and then I've got a little bit of testimony. For those of you that have been part of this committee before, we've had some, in the past, we've had concerns about Minnesota's predatory pricing statute. That law was adopted in 1937, and back during the Depression, and the concern about the reason for the law was that there was a concern that a competitor would come into a market, a large competitor, would come into a market and below price or below cost, price, which means that they would take the price of hardware, for example, and they'd make everything well below cost in order to price out the local hardware store. And when the local hardware store was gone, then they'd jack up their prices, and that would rip off consumers. So, and I understand the reasoning behind that. I support that statute generally. What we've had recently, however, in fact, starting in about October of last year, was there were a couple of competitors that came into Minnesota's market, wanted to price prescription drugs, generic prescription drugs, at $4. Now, first off, by definition, when you have more than one come into a market and want to price prescription drugs at $4, you've already got competition. So arguably, in fact, Attorney General Mike Hatch was asked, does this violate Minnesota's predatory pricing statute? He said he didn't think that it did. And that was good, except for the fact that there was a concern that some of the county attorneys who make decisions independently of the Attorney General's office might still charge out Target or Walmart or some of the others that were pricing at $4 because they were below cost, that they might go after them. And so as a result, even though these entities wanted to price their prescription drugs at $4, they didn't. They took some and priced them at $4 because that wasn't below cost. But they have several others that are $9 or $15 or $16 or $20, even though they wanted to price them at $4. I might add, Attorney General Swanson has taken a neutral position with respect to it. So this issue is before the legislature, and it cries out for some legislation to address that issue. What my bill does is it recognizes the fact that if there are, in fact, two competitors or more, hopefully, that are pricing within 10% of one another with regard to prescription drugs, we don't care how low they want to go. In fact, I would dare them. I want them to beat the crud out of one another. It's America, folks. You know, let them go after each other as long as they want to. If they want to price generics at 50 cents a pop, more power to them. But it definitely, in my estimation, does not run afoul of the original purpose of the 1937 law, which was that we want competition. This is competition at its heart. If Target and Walmart and CVS and Rite Aid and Snyder's and whomever else want to go after each other, more power to them, and we shouldn't stand in their way. I would still have a problem if we had a single competitor coming in. That's why I don't want to undo the predatory statute altogether. If we got one big kahuna that comes in and wants to price out that local hardware store, I still got a problem with that. So what this does, if folks are within 10% of each other, then we've got competition. That should be an exception to Minnesota's predatory pricing statute. That was the original bill. What the amendment does is that I got some feedback from some rural pharmacists, and I've got a great deal of regard. My uncle, in fact, is a pharmacist, and shared with me concerns that some small-town pharmacies, they might struggle with this. Even though there is competition, even though it's not running afoul of the original intent of the law, that it might still be harmful to some of our small-town pharmacists. So taking that into account, the amendment language says simply that this is going to apply. Number one, it only applies for a year. So we're going to see, and after a year, if it's not working and it's had harm or whatever, we'll know that. And if it's going well, then it'll be incumbent upon me to come back before you again and say, and hopefully the pharmacist would come with me and say, this has not had an impact on us, and we'd repass it again. But I also said that it's not going to apply to cities, to the small town cities. What it'll apply to is the seven county metro area and cities of 50,000 people or more. So Duluth, Rochester, St. Cloud. We're going to try it out in those cities, see how it works, and go from there. I might add, there has been considerable commentary in various newspapers across Minnesota by a variety of pharmacists in small towns that have said, not having, you know, this has been, $4 drugs have been out there for a few months now. Folks that have said, it ain't having any impact on me. In fact, no less authority than the Wall Street Journal on December 27, 2006, said that the reason it's not having any impact is because the people that are using this, many of them are uninsured. Most of them are uninsured. They weren't buying their drugs before. So they literally were going out without their prescriptions because they simply couldn't afford them. I have not ever introduced a bill, and I've introduced a lot of bills, that has gotten this much positive commentary from people all across. No lobbyists, no fancy lawyers, just a bunch of people all over the place that have written me letters and called me and sent me emails, saying that this is something they really, that means a lot to them. You're going to hear shortly from one woman that's had a big impact on her life, but she's not alone. There have been lots of people that have said it's saving me $80 a month or $100 a month. There was one story I heard of a woman that she didn't know about the program, showed up, got her prescription drugs, was used to spending $120, it cost her $20, and for the first time in 2 years, she was going to go out and have a hamburger at an actual restaurant. That's what this bill does, and it's meaningful to people. I think it's important legislation. With that, I believe that there are some folks that would like to have their testimony heard on it, and then I'll have a few follow-up comments and answer your questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair Atkins. Can you bring your, I think on the first for your testifiers, is it Kim Crockett?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it is.
Okay. Ms. Crockett, go ahead, I'm sorry. Welcome. Take your time, get settled. Welcome to our committee. Can you please state your name and just go ahead whenever you're ready.
Sure.
Thank you.
Hi, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kim Crockett, and I'm a Walmart prescription drug customer, and I'm here today to support House File 282. In October 2005, my husband, Mike, a diabetic, had his second heart attack. Shortly after that, his employer of 6 years gave him an alternative, be retained for a fairly menial job. He was a truck driver, and because of his second heart attack, he couldn't drive truck. So they told him he could work in the shop, but he didn't want to do that. So they paid him to quit. When he left his job, he not only lost a steady income, but he also lost our insurance. And this was clearly a concern to my husband and our health problems. And in addition to that, I have diabetes. I was diagnosed with blood sugar level of 565, more than 400 points higher than a healthy level of 120. And it's still high, but I'm dealing with it. For 8 months, we went without insurance. All the while, we had prescriptions that weren't filling because we couldn't afford them. I went months without my diabetes medication. I should be on 6 a day, and I can only afford one because it's on the $4 list at Walmart. Even now with my husband back at work and the insurance coverage we have, our prescription coverage is still limited. We need to pay for prescriptions up front and then submit our prescriptions for reimbursement, and we still can't afford that. But with prescription costing as much as $300 each and having to wait for reimbursement, we can't afford all our prescriptions. So we continue to go without some of our medications. I know there are many people out there who are in the same predicament as my husband and me, but the one thing that makes a big difference for us through all of this Walmart for prescription program, it's amazing. It's helped us thoroughly. Since that program started a few months ago, I've switched from our prescription to medications that are $4 on the list, and we're working with doctors to determine other prescriptions that I can use that are on the list, because we can't afford anything else but the ones that are on the list. Walmart's $4 prescription program has changed our lives literally. This program is saving us $1,000 a month. If we had received more of our prescriptions through the $4 program, we'd save even more money. More importantly, we will be able to afford the medication we have gone without in the past. Medications that will prolong our lives and allow us to enjoy our grandkids and life in general. I understand the House File 282 will allow additional prescriptions to be offered at $4. If my husband and I already save $1,000 a month because of the Walmart program, I can only imagine the huge amount that Minnesotans as a whole could save in additional medications that would be provided at this reduced rate. Please pass House File 282. You will be saving lives and giving people more years to enjoy what they love. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Crockett. And any questions for her? Thank you very much for your testimony. And stick around. We might have some questions for you, but
thank you
very much. Next up, we'd like to have Lee Krawczyk from the Senior Federation. Okay. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, and if you could state your name for the record, and
sure.
Go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representatives. My name is Lee Krawczyk. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Senior Federation. The Minnesota Senior Federation has a long and some would say colorful history regarding prescription drug pricing. I'm not going to bore you with a lot of details, but I think it's interesting to note at one time we actually owned the pharmacy. To say that we lack the business acumen to operate such a business would be an understatement. We closed the store and sold the business, quite frankly, at the assistance of the IRS. At that time, they decided we owed some unrelated business income taxes that we weren't aware of, and so in order to sort of square up, we had to sell the business. I'm told that we sold it for a dollar. The fact of the matter is I'm also told it was only worth about 50 cents by the time we got through with it, so we did come out ahead. Now, I'm also aware, as I reviewed the 1937 law, we were in violation of it when we had the pharmacy, because what we did is we sold the pharmaceuticals at below what was a reasonable cost, and consequently, we were faltering in terms of the finances. I tell you this with some trepidation, but knowing that the statute of limitations probably has run out. We sold our prescriptions as well as our over-the-counter drugs without an eye towards the bottom line. I tell you this because one of the things that's become very obvious to the Senior Federation, and more than likely to you as well, is that the small community pharmacies, known as the ma and pa operations, are and should be concerned about the bottom line. Rural pharmacies are and have been under assault. They're vital not only to the seniors in those communities, but to the entire population in those communities. And I got to tell you, I couldn't help but think about this when I remembered what happened when Medicare Part D was implemented, when the dual eligibles were put in jeopardy because the feds and the state couldn't decide who was going to pay for the prescriptions in the first months of that program, you might recall. And what happened is the pharmacies actually stepped forward and agreed to give the patients the medications they need needed and wait for the Fed's mistake to straighten out the payment system. So it's not without some concern that we back this legislation. But it is, as an organization that for a long time has sponsored bus trips to Canada to help mitigate prescription drug prices, the thought that it might become necessary to start bus trips to another state is daunting. But I got to tell you, we're prepared to do that. And other states across the nation have allowed both Walmart and Target to do the sort of pricing that would be available in Minnesota across the board with this change in the 1937 law. That would mean that it would actually be possible that we would prohibit it, and with some exceptions, and we'd actually start running bus trips to other states in order to get the $4 prescription drugs and generics. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Groshek. Sorry about that. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Paulson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Groshek, do you envision there's going to be bus trips now from cities that are over 50,000?
I thought about under 50,000. I'm hoping not, but the fact of the matter is, it's possible. I highly doubt it. Obviously, the metro area is a mecca for shopping for the entire state, and I suspect those trips will be made on a personal level rather than any organized effort. But I did contemplate that this afternoon.
To
that point, to our testifier, Mr. Chairman, we're hearing how we're making busload trips to Canada. We have people talk about making trips to Mexico and paying for their trips for doing the same thing. So I'm quite confident that if this becomes a reality in law, you're going to see people making carload trips into the seven county metro area, and I hope all the rural legislators are just kind of paying attention to this, because we're asking for our customer base to move into the metro area for shopping.
Mr.
Chair Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Simpson. I appreciate the concern very much. At the same time, if the Wall Street Journal and some of the others that have looked at this closely are in fact correct, what you'll find is that the customer base for this are people that weren't buying at all before. They're uninsured folks that weren't able to afford the prescription drug in the first place, and I can't imagine that they're going to the people that are frequenting your small town pharmacy in greater Minnesota would see a need, many of whom are insured and are purchasing their drug for $3 or $5 or $7. Heaven knows gas prices have gotten significant enough that it would sort of argue against making that trip. So I appreciate the concern.
Representative Simpson? I'm not sure I should pick on. You've got these Girl Scout cookies over there.
Hey, yeah.
And, go ahead. I'm sorry, sir.
That's fine. And I appreciate the what you're trying to do here. I think this has merit. Your first testifier that came up to the table, how can I sit here and say this isn't a good thing for a case when people aren't being able to buy drugs because of the cost or because they don't have health insurance? I respect that, and I think that's a good thing. But I see in our local scale of economy what people will do to save a nickel. Sometimes it's pretty frightening how far they'll drive to do it. So that's my concern. Thank you.
Chair Atkins?
Unfortunately, Mr. Chair, and I know that there's others that desire to testify, but I suspect they may tell you this, that the greatest challenge to the small pharmacies now isn't going to be this legislation. It's probably the Internet and mail order, where people are ordering their drugs online, and they're coming in from thousands of miles away, at possibly even less than what this is. But this at least keeps a pharmacist involved live and in person. So thank you.
Well, any other questions for the testifier? Thank you, sir, for coming up. And I'm sorry about that, Representative Simpson, for corralling your cookies. Samoas are quite tempting. So
that's okay. Girl Scout cookies are meant to be shared because they come in a lot of boxes.
Right. Well, thank you very much. Next up is Julie Johnson. Is she here? Okay. Looks like somebody's with. Oh, and William Deers. Okay. Go ahead and get settled in and welcome to the Commerce Committee. And if you could introduce yourself when you get settled,
thank
go
you,
ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julie Johnson. I'm been a pharmacist for 25 years. The last six, I've been director of the Minnesota Pharmacists Association. There are. I am here to speak in against this bill. We do not support the bill. We'd like to take some time to explain why. It's very difficult to follow a patient in testifying that you agree with and that you, that your heart goes out to. There's no one, no other group of people than pharmacists that understand how difficult it is for patients to pay for their prescriptions. And that's why you saw the pharmacists of the state and the country help patients sign up for Medicare Part D, help patients with industry assistance programs and many of the offerings that, that Minnesota has to help patients pay for their prescriptions. So I just had to preface it by sort of painting a picture of pharmacists. I mentioned that we don't support the bill, and we have two areas of concern, and you talked about one of them extensively, and that is the business or economic concern. I applaud Mr. Representative Adkins for his efforts to meet the need of to attempt to meet the need of patients in assistance in paying for prescriptions. I also would like to commend him for his amendment to this bill. He's right. We did spend a lot of time talking with him about our concerns, and I'd like to share some of them with you today. And though I applaud his effort to protect the rural area and the rural pharmacies, there are 319 independent pharmacies in this state, and the rural pharmacies will be tickled to death. I don't think our metro pharmacies are going to be happy to find out that the state does not want to protect their business anymore, like with protection in the law. I think it's sort of a contradiction and an inconsistency in policy to protect one group of businesses over another. And I think that's a basic concern we have with the bill as the Pharmacists Association. The other part of it is the whole issue of cost. There's a cost for medications, no doubt, and we all think of it as very high, and it is. Generics, thank goodness for them. More generics are prescribed and dispensed in this state because of pharmacists. Generics are a good thing. We are not against generics. We're happy to see that, that generics offer a cost savings for patients. But the cost of the medication is only part of the cost of a patient getting it, receiving it, making sure it's safe, and making sure someone looks at the rest of their drug therapy. It's not a matter of throwing pills in a bottle. So each time it comes up or I have to talk about incentives to go to somewhere other than face-to-face with a pharmacy, we have this other, the other concern, and that's the health concern. And I'm going to let Mr. Deers expound on that one. But to get back to the cost, recently there nationwide and statewide, there was a cost of dispensing study done. And that is the cost other than the cost of the drug. So to us it was like somebody doing a study to finally say what I was worth. And it says I'm worth, on average, between $9 and $10 per prescription on top of the cost of the drug. It's nice to have that information. When someone offers a prescription at $4, they're not only foregoing the cost of the drug, but the cost of the services. I just wanted to paint that picture as well. The second issue maybe is to some people is a bigger concern, and that one will probably make more sense. It does to me as a pharmacist, and that's the health concern. Each time that a patient comes into my pharmacy, I have an obligation to not only make sure the prescription is right for him, it's written right, him or her, the right dose, and that it doesn't conflict with the rest of the drugs on their profile. It's very difficult to do that if I don't have the whole profile. And this is a definite health concern. And I'm going to let Bill Deers expound on that a little bit, and then we'll take questions after he's through, if that's okay.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Mr. Deers, welcome to the committee. Go ahead and state your name and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Julie, and representatives of the committee. My name is Bill Deers. I'm a practicing pharmacist. I'm a staff pharmacist at United Hospital here in St. Paul, just not too many blocks away. Obviously, I've been in this pharmacy game for many years, and I've been in all aspects of it. I spent many years in hospital practice, did spend many years in retail practice also. I am currently a member of the Board of Directors of Minnesota Pharmacists Association. In my career, I also served as president of the Minnesota Hospital Pharmacists Association, or the Health System Pharmacists Association. I currently chair the Patient Safety Committee of the Minnesota Pharmacists Association, and I want to talk for a few minutes today about my concerns about this bill and having to do with the fragmentation of healthcare, because I believe this bill tends to do that. We have seen over the last 5 to 10 years that more and more patients coming to emergency rooms and admitted to hospitals are there because of something happened with their drug therapy. People take lots of drugs. We sell them over TV. We sell them over the internet. There's more available now than there ever has been. I'm one of the baby boomer crowd. There's going to be a lot of us coming down the road here over the next 20 years. So there's more people having more drugs to take, taking more drugs, and thank goodness we live longer. So we're going to have more years to take them. And the more we get into aspects of fragmenting that care, where we don't have one individual helping us make sense of all these various drugs and the interactions and the allergies and the doses and the low doses and the missed doses, I think we're going to be in trouble. And when we incentivize people to shop around and to buy this drug in this place and this drug in that place and this drug in that place, who is going to help that individual make sense of all these medications? I know in my work at United Hospital, at the emergency room at United Hospital, sees patients on a regular basis that are there because of some drug issue. They took the wrong dose. They took too many of them. They took two things that interacted. I know we admit patients on a regular basis that are there because of some drug issues. When we admit patients, we're admitting patients who are taking 10, 12, 15 drugs. This is a huge issue. And trying to make sense of it, to me, one of the ways to make sense of it is the way we do it with medical care, is we encourage people to establish a primary physician. I think it also makes sense to encourage people to establish a primary pharmacist, somebody to help them work through all this mess. And there are lots of drugs out there to do it. I just turned in looking at this today, and I just was talking to a colleague, and they commented they had seen a report come out of the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, that has recognized that the second leading cause of accidental death is now inappropriate use of medications behind car accidents. So this is a big issue, and I am very concerned when we financially incentivize people to shop around. I don't think it's a good deal. I can certainly appreciate, and as Julie said, and as the lady who testified earlier, I can certainly appreciate the cost of drugs. My own mother's a good example of one that she'll skip one now and then because they cost money. You know, and that's the thing we work with all the time. We're looking for optimum care, not the cheapest care. And optimum care is not necessarily always buying the cheapest drug. It's getting the best therapy for the longest time. You avoid one ER visit. You avoid one hospitalization. You save a lot more money than you save over a few dollars on a prescription. So my concern is really that fragmentation of care and putting things in place that will tend to incentivize fragmentation. I think it's a dangerous road to go down for our healthcare system in this country as a whole. And from my experience, it's a very dangerous road to go down when it comes to medication therapy. So, Mr. Chairman and the committee, thank you for letting me take the time. I'd be very welcome to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deere. Representative Anzilk has a question. I don't know if there's any others, too, so I'm not sure which one it's for, but...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To both of the testifiers, your testimony is interesting. I agree with the mess. Certainly agree with the fragmentation. Can one conclude, then, that the Minnesota pharmacists support single-payer universal health care?
Members of the committee.
Go ahead, Ms.
Representative. We don't currently have a policy of support or not support of that issue. May I just say something?
Yes.
I
go ahead, Ms. Johnson.
Didn't say at the beginning. We did hand out some information for you. Included, I got a fax from a member and a representative from Walgreens wanted to share a letter with you as well. So that is also in your packet. We sometimes get the idea that we just represent the mom-and-pop places and the independent pharmacies, and as you can see, we do represent a larger crowd. And I want to say one more thing. Bill talked about our concern with people shopping around. And over the years, and it's been a lot of years, when patients have come into the pharmacy, and I can remember years ago when there weren't as many assistance programs and there wasn't Medicare Part D, that people did shop around more when more people paid cash. And the only thing as a professional I can say to them is, yes, for heaven's sake, shop around. So do I. But don't take one drug and get a price here and take another drug and get a price there. Take all of your drugs. You're on nine of them. Take all nine of them. Take them to your four choices in pharmacies and then look at your total cost and then make the decision. And we found that if you took the whole bunch of them, the cost did not differ that much. Plus, the patient doesn't just choose for cost. They choose for location. They choose for who they, if they can get consistent care. They choose it for a pharmacist, frankly. Same reason they choose other medical care.
Representative Enzel, do you have anything further? Okay. Any further questions for the testifiers? Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson and Mr. Deere. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to open it up to the audience. Is there any testifiers in the audience that would like to be heard on this matter? Okay. Looks like it's back to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I don't think anyone would argue with that we all want to preserve and protect the health of Minnesotans. And I certainly have a high regard for the testimony that was just provided. We have those issues now. The cost of prescription drugs, generic prescription drugs, varies widely. It has varied even more widely since October, when $4 prescription drugs went into place with regard to about 255 various prescriptions. And so people can already do that now. Moreover, if I were a target pharmacist, I might take a little bit of offense because they have the same obligations. If somebody goes to Target or they go to Walmart, there's pharmacists there too, and it's their job, their obligation, it's their oath that they take to take these issues into account. And while I certainly have the highest respect for small-town pharmacists and independent pharmacists, their obligation is no less and no greater than that of a pharmacist at Target or Walmart or Costco or CVS or wherever else they want to shop. So we have those protections now. And as Ms. Johnson said, they should. If somebody is shopping around, they should take the prescription that they bought here and here and here and take it and show it to their pharmacist. But those obligations are already there. With that, I've got nice blow-ups of the map, and I've got some comments, and there's been about a half dozen newspaper clippings and quotes across. Don't worry about them, guys. Including the past president, Mr. Stevens from Red Wing, who's, I believe, still on the Minnesota Pharmacist Board, that commented that the $4 drug program hasn't made a lick of difference. That was in the Red Wing Republican Eagle about a month ago. With that, I'd appreciate your support. I do need to amend my original motion. It's my understanding that the Health Policy Committee would like to see this. And while I didn't want to object to the health testimony in here, I think that's probably best left for that committee, and I would look forward to having that discussion with them, but would appreciate your support of this bill today.
Any further discussion regards to this bill? Representative Zellers.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, and to Chair Atkins, I think you pretty much said it best. You side with the small business owners, the small town pharmacists, but we all want to see the folks who need their drugs getting their drugs as well. So it's a great concept. I know that some of the members on each side of the aisle in this committee probably have different feelings or different constituencies. And you know, in looking at the bill originally, when it was the first draft, it was pretty much a bigger product, and you know, didn't necessarily apply metro versus rural. It was broad. And after the change in the seven county metro, I'm just looking to see what you
how you'd entertain an idea of, instead of just prescriptions, drugs, opening up to a good or a service. So if it's good for the prescription drugs, it's good for blue jeans, it's good for car washes, you name it.
Chair Atkins?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, blue jeans and car washes don't save my life. And I've visited with a lot of folks that have wondered whether or not I would entertain that, to whether it be gas prices or garden hoses or tools. And my answer is I still see great value in the predatory pricing statute generally, particularly where you got one big behemoth that comes in and prices out that small town hardware store. That's what this statute's all about. In this case, we've got multiple entrants into this market, and it is a product that saves your life, and it's a product that hopefully helps your quality of life a great deal, and particularly if you're uninsured and you weren't able to get your prescription drugs anywhere else before. So, no, I'm not interested in doing that at this time.
Anything further, Representative Zellers?
Yep. Well, thank you, Chair Lilly and Chair Atkins. I understand, and I'm just looking to make a good bill a little bit better, and unfortunately, actually, you are going to another committee, so maybe some on that. Maybe over the course of that time, we'll maybe see the wisdom or be convinced otherwise.
Mr. Chair, I always appreciate Representative Zellers looking out for my good. So I'll give it some thought, but I still won't do it.
Okay, Representative Paulson?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, I think that, again, you appreciated the positive feedback you had when you, I think, got some attention after introducing this bill. I think you'd get a lot of positive feedback from a lot of folks. You may get some others that may be concerned about, you know, broadening the bill, as Representative Zellers may have suggested, but I think you'd get a lot of positive feedback as well. So I would hope you would entertain it as you go forward.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Chair Atkins.
Representative Paulson, thank you very much. Even the pharmacists are kicking my rear end all over town. So I have a great deal of regard for the pharmacists, and I think my hope is to try to stay focused on that issue, do my best to work with those pharmacists that are doing good work for people, and yet also take care of folks that need to get these drugs.
Any further questions? Okay. So Chair Atkins renews his motion as amended, and it's being re-referred to the Committee on Health and Health Policy. So all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and your bill is moving on to committee, and thank you very much. Looks like that's it for the day, and thank you very much. Move to adjourn. Thank you.